The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Honeywell is a Fortune 100 industrial company that is a leader in a wide variety of industries and products ranging from aerospace to air purifiers. I'm Brian Fernandez, and today on The Breakfast Grill, we have Brian Krier, president of Honeywell ASEAN. Bryant is going to share with us Honeywell's transformation from a huge legacy industrial company to a 21st century connected company. Good morning, Brian, and welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Great, thanks. It's great to be here.
You're on The Breakfast Grill almost exactly a year ago, and you were 3 months into your role at that time. How has business been for Honeywell in the last 12 months?
It's been fantastic in several ways. Our growth here in the region has really started to take off across all of our businesses. Part of that is a reflection of what's happening in the region overall, just the growth. But it's really driven a lot by the investment that Honeywell's making into the region. When I was here a year ago, I mentioned that we have just set up a new headquarters for Honeywell for ASEAN, for Southeast Asia, here in KL. And we've got about 1,500 people in Malaysia, about 3,500 across all of ASEAN. But as far as managers and leaders in KL, we had about, I'd say, a little over 300 last year. We have a little over 400 now. And over the next 4 or 5 years, that's going to double.
Wow, that sounds very impressive. It looks like you've placed a very big bet on Malaysia.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bet on the broader all of ASEAN, with Malaysia being our headquarters to drive it from.
Within the ASEAN space itself, in your four main business areas, where have the growth areas been?
Well, it's really across the board. All of our businesses are growing. We've been here for the longest time, and our biggest part of our business is in the performance materials and technologies, mostly in oil and gas, which we all know is a major, part of the region here. With oil and gas being down a little bit over the last few years from a global perspective, and obviously it's impacted here and Honeywell also, we've really been seeing a lot of growth in our home and building technologies and in our safety and productivity solutions. With all of the growth that's happening in this region with the urbanization and the growth of the middle class, you can see how much building is happening, whether it's, commercial buildings or residential towers or hospitality, through the hotel industry. There's a lot of building happening here in KL and throughout Southeast Asia. And so we have lots and lots of systems that go into buildings that control the buildings, the heating, the cooling, the valve systems, and building management systems that actually control the building so that it can be operate more cleanly and more productively.
And literally, this is a bet on IoT and smart building technologies. I assume that's the clear direction that you're moving in.
It is. Buildings kind of used to be, you build it and you take it to the owner, and it becomes something that kind of just needs maintenance over time. And, it's not something that really added to the business, if you will. Buildings now, people are looking at them much differently. Buildings can be an asset to you if you put the right systems in to be able to manage them from an energy perspective, from a security perspective, safety, and making it attractive for all the occupants, whether they're residential or commercial or whatever that is. And the big drive, frankly, it's the mega trend for the globe, if you will, is around connected. Everything is being connected. On the IoT of things, we focus a lot on the I, right, with the Googles of the world and folks like that. But the T part is the things. And Honeywell, across our four businesses, has thousands and thousands of things. And in fact, if you hear a lot of the experts talk about it now, they say the actually more difficult part of the IoT equation is the T. It's the things and building all of that. So right now, we're really looking at the next 15 years for Honeywell in transforming from an industrial company, a straight industrial company, to a software industrial company, to be in line with this whole IoT of things. And we believe that because of the number of things that we have, we're having conversations now and signing deals with the Googles of the world and all of that to connect this IoT piece. And we believe that we have the positioning and should be a major player in IoT going forward.
Tell us a little bit more about your partnership with Google, because Google has obviously made big bets in this area, particularly with the the acquisition of Nest. Please share with us how that impacts, because you seem to be more obviously the traditional Honeywell base in building technology. The Nest initiative is more towards the consumer side of the business.
It is, but so this is the area where, frankly, Honeywell has a lot of advantage, is that we have, you know, what Nest is doing. Frankly, a few years ago, that kind of caught Honeywell by surprise, right? But now we've kind of caught up in that. In fact, last year, our Lyric connected thermostat system was voted number one, right, ahead of Nest.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so we have solutions for the home. We have solutions for buildings, whether it's commercial or residential. So we're really across the board, whereas Nest is pretty much focused just on the home. But we have a whole strategy that we call the connected home, where you know we establish an ecosystem and we're able to really connect many different things in the home together in a way that's seamless to the operator. It's apps on your phone. It's all of that. And there's lots of companies that are heading in that direction. But we really feel like we have a bit of an advantage. I mean, we have – our installed base is massive. I mean, Honeywell's already in 150 million homes. We're in 10 million buildings, 10,000 factories. With our connected worker, industrial workers, we have 500 million workers that are – you know, have Honeywell's you know, industrial safety equipment that they're using and clothing. So we really feel like we have the space, we have the installed base, we have all these things. And partnering with companies like Google, and I can't talk about the details of all that, it's still kind of all in the works. But the reality is companies right now are looking for how do you really make the IoT an offering that people will pay for? There's lots of discussion about IoT. The key is to being able to connect the digital, the I part, to the T, the physical products. The last 20 years has been about digital to digital. The next 20 years will be about digital to physical. And so the people on the digital side, the people on the physical side are trying to figure out what are those offerings that we can put together that people will actually be valued by people and they'll actually pay for. We're just in the very beginning of figuring that out. And the more that we have these smart sensors, which Honeywell has a lot of, we have sensors we can put in just about every physical product, and you get information off of those, what we call the edge devices out there. You get that information, you start combining that with the internet and the connected piece. It's really exponential how that will grow, because you'll start creating ecosystems of physical products that are connected, and that ecosystem will connect with another ecosystem and another. And so as we get further into this, we'll really start to see where we're connecting things that people never even thought about connecting before and providing value. But that's the key of where we need to get to, and we're really just in the beginning stages of that.
And this is all fascinating to me, particularly because I think the worldview of Honeywell is really this old industrial company that's in large systems. And here you are, you've just broadened our horizons really about how Honeywell is really going straight to the consumer, especially in this part of the world where probably there's little or no brand awareness of Honeywell. But that looks like it's a completely different business model for Honeywell. How do you plan to distribute this? Are you going to be an OEM supplier? Are you going to brand it Honeywell? Could you share with us how that's going to happen?
It's a different business model in the sense that we are going to become a little bit more B2C, right? Particularly when you're talking, you know, connected home and all of that. It's driving us more in that direction. But the reality is the vast majority of Honeywell is still B2B, right? But we are doing a number of B2C things, again, with the connected home, with air purification systems, which actually we're launching here in Malaysia. We've had some in the market here before, but those have been older systems. These are much more updated systems, much higher level of purification and all of that. But it's really – people ask me, and even some of our employees say, oh, we're going to become a software company now. No, it's not an or. It's not products or software. It's products and software. So we'll still be the products and industrial company that we've always been. And with what we're doing from a human user interface perspective, we're really figuring out how to design our products so that across our huge portfolio of products, they look the same. They're designed the same. They turn on the same way. You know, all of those kind of things. We're doing a much better job in that. So our products are more seamless in that way. But now it's about, you know, how do you connect those products into the connected space? Because that's, frankly, that's where the world's going now. I mean, now when you go somewhere, the expectation is that you'll be connected.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, yes. And so it's in buildings, but, you know, we haven't even talked about the aerospace side where it's around connected aircraft, right? It's going to be 5-10 years from now, you'll get on an airplane and you'll forget what it was like to not be completely connected. You know, whether you're flying just within Malaysia or you're flying to the U.S., it'll be a seamless connection on your cell phone, downloading files, streaming movies. That's just the way it's going to be.
You know, it's interesting that you talked about connected and being seamlessly being able to move from one realm to another. I was going to ask you about, and this is what you mentioned in your last interview in the Grill last year, about making inroads into the defense business in Malaysia. How much progress have you made in the last 12 months?
We've made quite a bit of progress. We're in Malaysia, but not just Malaysia, across Southeast Asia. It comes with that investment in resources, if you will. We've had people here in the region before, but just a few, and we were flying people in and out. And you know, the one thing that we know about being very successful in high growth regions around the world over the last 10 to 12 years is that you need to be local. You've got to be local with local leadership, making decisions in the same time zones, you know, and being able to do that quickly and decisively. And so now we've put more people in place, not only from a sales and front end perspective, but from a business and the functions to support all that. So now we're being successful in talking to the folks here in Malaysia. We've got a number of contracts here with some of the helicopter operators. It's been a little bit slow because of the oil and gas piece and all that. But we're talking to the folks here about, you know, how we can do a number of upgrades to the aircraft that they have here in Malaysia. And again, across ASEAN, there's a lot of platforms that are U.S., you know, C-130s and helicopters and other ones like that, that we have a lot of upgrades, both for on the avionics side and on the mechanical side, so that the whether it's a military or whoever the operator is can fly that aircraft for a lot longer rather than having to buy something new, which is very, very expensive, and have it be much more capable from a mission perspective than it's ever been, really.
So I've got to ask you a question because you've been a naval aviator before. We have legacy F-18 Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
Malaysia is in an unusual position where we have many different aircraft for a very small air force. In fact, one of your colleagues, Mark Burgess, made a comment in March of this year, and he said that Malaysia needs to consolidate its defense hardware in ships and planes and improve communications. And as a citizen, you know, we have been told that basically we've had aircraft being lost that have not been tracked. Incursions by foreign elements and the radars haven't detected them. How can Honeywell play a role in this space?
Well, first of all, I would just say relative to Mark's comment on that, you could make that comment just about any Air Force or military in the world, frankly. If you look, I mean, even the U.S., right? If you look at it, we have many, many different kinds of aircraft. We've been at it for about 20 years now where the mandate has been, listen, Air Force, if you buy an aircraft, then we need to – Navy, you need to buy it too, right? And maybe you have a different version, but rather than lots of different ones. And there's so many militaries across the world that are in the same position. So Malaysia is not unique in that. The reality is, though, is you can't completely upgrade your military in one fell swoop. It's too expensive to do. So you have to make some smart decisions around which aircraft you're going to retire and which aircraft you're going to upgrade. And if you make that decision about upgrading an aircraft, whether it's an F-18 or a C-130 or a UH-1 helicopter, whatever, chances are Honeywell, well, I know, we have systems on all of those aircraft, and chances are we have an upgrade that we can do for you. If you want to operate the aircraft for 5 more years, then we can do a little bit of an upgrade. If you want to operate for 30 more years, then we do a more extensive one. So we can be very, very flexible in, you know, what we do around that. And that's one of the big areas that we're really focused on right now.
I'm speaking to Brian Greer, president of Honeywell ASEAN. After the break, we will ask Brian about his experiences as an entrepreneur and as a naval aviator.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
This is Brian Fernandez speaking to Brian Greer, president of Honeywell ASEAN, on the Breakfast Grill this morning. Brian, other than being a successful corporate leader, you have a very interesting background as a naval aviator in a previous life, as well as an entrepreneur. Could you please share with us how you decided to join the military and how did you go from there?
So first of all, it does feel like a previous life. But so I grew up in the military. I was a Navy brat. You know, my father moved all around the world. And when it came time for me to figure out what to do, I didn't really know anything else. So I ended up doing the same thing. It was great. I really enjoyed it to be a young officer in the Navy and be around a lot of your colleagues that have a similar outlook to you and get to do some pretty fun things and flying and being around the world. It was a great experience. But I can say that after leaving the Navy and my experience in industry and mostly on the aerospace side over the last 20 plus years has been equally rewarding and just as exciting in its own way.
And what did you do in the Navy? I understand that you were an anti-submarine aircraft?
Yeah, so the aircraft that that I flew was called the S-3 Viking. It doesn't exist anymore because the mission was designed, to protect the carrier battle group against the Soviet submarine threat. Now, obviously, when, the Soviet Union broke up, there actually still are a lot of submarines out there. But that mission kind of went away. And that was actually after I had left my squadron and had gone on to do some other assignments within the Navy. Since then, I've been involved. I stayed in the Navy as a reserve officer for a while and retired as a commander. And so I still have a lot of affinity to and interest in the Navy. And, there's a long history within my family. But like I said, I've been very, very fortunate, very excited to be able to have a career in aerospace, in aviation outside of the military.
Can you also share with us then your experiences as an entrepreneur and how that has shaped you?
Yeah, it's interesting. So when I was in a role in living in Los Angeles right around 2000 when the big .com piece hit, and myself and a couple other guys said, you know what, the things we're doing, because the company I was working for at the time manufactured literally the nuts and bolts of the aircraft. Very commodity type items. They don't need a lot of engineering discussion when you go to purchase them. So we thought that this was a good product and a good model to kind of build a internet platform around. And so we did that. We built a platform. It was a bit of a NASDAQ, for buying commodity, hardware items. We got the site built. We got a lot of buyers and a lot of sellers on it because you have to create a critical mass in there. That's the key for any type of marketplace
like that. Absolutely.
But ultimately, like all things that went up, .com went down. We spent a couple of years at it. We ended up not being successful. But the experience was fabulous. You learn a lot when you're an entrepreneur working by yourself. You have the highest highs and the lowest lows. But I think you learn a lot about that. And I think that actually has helped me, coming back into industry when you're in the big company and understanding that there's times to be a big leader and to do things at a high level, and there's times you need to roll up your sleeves and get it done. And it doesn't matter what your title, what your rank is or whatever. If it needs to get done, you get it done, and you learn that as an entrepreneur. And I've applied that here, with Honeywell, and certainly did that, in the Navy also. And I think it, for anyone who's in that type of role, I think being able to always remember how you got there and to be able to roll up your sleeves and get it done if you need to do it is a good approach.
What would you describe your management style like?
I would say that, it's trust but verify. And what I mean by that is that I put a lot of stock in hiring the right people to begin with, right? And then developing them and letting them go run with it, letting them go find out how to do it and be successful. But what you need to do when you're with a big company and a big public company and you have to hit results on a quarterly and annual basis, you have to be – you have to know when the numbers are coming in. You have to make sure that's all happening. So I do a lot of – I have an operating system where I'm able to be able to, on a regular basis, get checks of how things are going. And if everything's going well, let people go do what they can do. There's a lot of great people that we have, and just let them be successful and let them run, not burden them with too many demands that don't add to the bottom line.
And American companies like Honeywell, as you correctly mentioned, are very results-orientated, very bottom-line-driven, sometimes very quarterly-driven as well. Mm. In the context of managing in ASEAN, how do you balance that with the fact that, particularly in some markets, sales cycles are very long, so you can't hire and fire people. Sales are often based on relationships. And so the guy who may not be performing very well has the really good relationships with key players. How do you manage someone like that?
Well, it's not a simple answer, right? Like any businesses, all businesses have their own challenges and their things that make it difficult, and some things that make it easier. I would say all businesses have to be constantly focused on the bottom line, on driving and having goals and setting goals. Because whether you're a public company and have quarterly targets you have to hit, or you're in any business, providing targets and deadlines for people, I think, is a natural thing that motivates and drives people, right? So I think everybody has that. In Southeast Asia, I don't really see it any differently, to be honest with you. One of the things that I have taken in my time, because before coming here in Malaysia, I was in China for 5 years, I've developed an appreciation more for the relationship being up here and understanding how important it is. And I think that we've lost touch for that a little bit back in the West. And I think it's good, because at the end of the day, anytime you're doing business, particularly in a technology type business we're in, there's always going to be issues that arise. Your ability to solve those issues, that happens between people, and relationships matter in that. So it's not – companies don't do business with companies. People do business with people. And so to me, I think the relationship piece is great here. It's just that you have to augment the relationship with some system, if you will, with some things that are repeatable, some processes. So if that person leaves or something happens, you've got a system, a process, a database behind it that can back it up so other people can step in. And that's just smart about how you set up your business for sustainable success for the long term, not just in the near term.
That's fascinating. As a final question to you, what would you give advice to a young manager who wants to succeed in the corporate world today?
Again, you could talk a long time about that, but just to make it simple, I would say number one, focus on your people. Hire the best people, develop those people, and retain those people. Because no matter how good you are individually, you could work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you will not be as productive and effective as if you hire three really good people around you. So I think that, when you're younger in your career, you focus a lot on the task. And as you move up in your career, you need to focus more on the people and hiring the right people, to making sure that if you get the best people in the organization, it makes the organization more effective and it makes your job a lot easier. So I would say focus on the people.
Thank you for joining us on The Breakfast Grill, Brian. That was Brian Greer, President of Honeywell ASEAN, and you are listening to BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile. Your passion drives our unlimited ideas.